it's amazing to me how businessmen can grow things, including 30-second breaks. I love it. Hey, good morning. My name is Scott Miller from Morgantown, West Virginia. My wife and three boys are not here with me. I have a 5-year-old son, Abiel. Eshben is 2. Malachi is 7 months, and I am literally living a dream. I love my family so much. And in fact, my wife, most of the time, I think my wife is the reason I don't go crazy. But then about half the time, she's the reason I think I'm going to go crazy. So, but she's been here at Boost before, and hopefully next time she can come. This time it just didn't work out. But my mission every day when I wake up is to add value to people. And this morning I woke up with the mission of trying to add value to you. So I pray, my prayer is that somehow this story will add value to your life. And my passion is to motivate and inspire the rising generation to live for God's greatest glory in all the earth. And so especially the younger generation, I hope you can lean in and hear a few things this morning with this story to kind of shift your perspective from the temporal, the here on earth, to the eternal. Because we make businesses, we have 20-year plans and stuff, but sometimes God has a way of reorienting those plans and causing our eyes to fix on Jesus rather than on our profits and our expenses and so on. And I'm convinced that the single greatest cause in the world today is joyfully rescuing people from hell and making them glad in God, meeting their earthly needs and doing it with a kind, sincere pleasure that makes Christ look like the treasure he is. And so if anything that I say can inspire you to engage in God's kingdom or inspire you to look from an eternal perspective, then I consider that success. And I want to just start off by just thanking God for his faithfulness. He is just, his power was so significant through this story, and so I just want to highlight his faithfulness in the beginning. Recently, I shared this story in Virginia, and I emphasized the faithfulness like I did, I will this morning, but some people asked me, well, what about when God doesn't come through? What about if the healing doesn't happen? And so I just want to be sensitive to that too, because I know you guys are probably connected to people when healing didn't happen and the miracles didn't come through when you wanted them. And so I'm not saying God isn't faithful when he doesn't bring those miracles, but what I'm saying is that he can be trusted. And when you look at things from an eternal perspective, he is trustworthy. He is faithful. So I want to share about an airplane accident that happened to me in 2005, July 17th. It is not a good idea to try this at home. But this happened out in Bonners Ferry, Idaho. Does anybody know Bonners Ferry, Idaho? It's kind of Mennonite community. Okay, about nobody. Some people are like, ish. So that basically, I was 20 years old, and I had, when I was 16 years old, I dropped out of high school and started my own trim thing. And then fast forward a couple years, me and my employee had this opportunity to pack up and go out west to Idaho to build this log cabin. Basically, Dave Byler, whose brothers had died in an airplane accident about 10 years prior to this, Dave Byler had a log cabin, timber frame log cabin company that he did the timber frame, and then I came in and did most of the rest for about 4 months or so. It was a beautiful, beautiful log cabin there. And then it was on a Sunday afternoon, the week before, I had met this pilot at the church camp that I had attended there. It was Bonner's Ferry's up right close to on the panhandle close to Canada in Idaho there. And I met this pilot, and he's like, hey, Scott, do you want to see the cabin that you're working on from the sky? I was out there for about 4 months to do this work. I said, sure, that'd be great. And so the next Sunday, just a couple days before, I was heading back to Holmes County where I grew up and where I was from, he said, or we took off after church. We were going to go up to his home place on the mountainside there where they had a landing strip and have a barbecue and stuff. And this here is a picture from the exact spot that the plane eventually crashed on the mountainside. And so that gives you an idea of what the surroundings were. But about 20 minutes into this flight, about 20 minutes in, we had been up over the cabins, beautiful July 17th, beautiful Sunday afternoon. The pilot, Jake Bushnell, he says, I don't like the looks of this, Scott. I don't like the looks of this at all. I said, Jake, what's wrong? What's happening? And I just remember looking over. He didn't respond to me. And then about that time, there's a siren that goes off in the cabin for low altitude. And he says, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. What am I going to do? We're going to crash. We're going to die. Oh, my God, oh, my God. And I remember this peace coming on me. And I can't even describe this, but this peace came on me just like never before, just like complete, like, it's okay, like, just warm sensation of just like peace. Now I remember looking over at Jake. He is freaking out. He's moving a lot, but he's not really doing anything. Just this variable pitch Cessna 181, I think it is, for all you pilots. Just two bucket seats in the front, little bench seat in the back. And I remember he's freaking out. Oh my God, we're gonna crash. We're gonna die. We're gonna crash. We're gonna die. There's nothing I can do. I had this peace. I put my hand over on Jake's hand. I was calmed him down. I said, Jake, that's all right. I'm ready to die. I know Jesus. Let's go to heaven. And about 3 seconds after I said that, I remember looking out the window and this tremendous crash just like right into the mountainside. And you might ask, like, why was it that we crashed right into the mountain? And basically, the best way I can describe it is that we were flying into a ridge of mountains. And it was 100% pilot air, but we were flying in, and he had planned to kind of go up and over the ridge and on up to his destination. He hadn't done a flight plan, which he should have, and he flew in too low because there's often downdrafts over mountains. And so that was the situation here. There's a downdraft that kept us from pulling up. And he basically, instead of going, I guess it's a variable pitch engine, and so he didn't want to stall, and so he didn't want to go steeper. But that would have been better than just taking it in 75 miles an hour. I'm not bitter. But pilots tell me he should have done a tight turn one way or the other, or gone like flaps up, and 50 more feet we would have cleared the tops of the trees, but we didn't, and we crashed into the mountainside here. And God has been so gracious. God has been so good. And so I just want to highlight some of the miracles in the search and rescue process here just for a second. So the first thing, so we crash, we're laying there. The first tree we hit, investigators say it was about an 8-inch pine, which actually worked to slow us down. We snapped right through that, and I remember glancing out the window here, another tremendous crash, and went right through another pine tree about 8 inches round, which slowed us down. And then the third tree we hit, and we kind of spun around that tree, and then eventually the plane kind of crashed and laid on the ground. I have a few pictures of the plane a little bit later on, but so we both knocked out unconscious for 2 hours, and Jake kind of came to the pilot, and he found his phone, tried to call out, no cell phone service. He found my phone, it's bloody, tried to clean it and call out, didn't work, and he cried out in desperation, God, please, I need some call. And he hadn't done like radio call from the plane that he was in distress. So nobody was looking for us. The people that had planned for lunch were like, hey, where are they at? But nobody was out looking for us. For 2 hours, we lay there. And then the call after the prayer of desperation went out. He didn't know exactly where he was, but he thought 20 minutes northwest from the airport. And so rescue personnel were on the way. And check it out. This is awesome. So the first chopper that got a visual on our crash site was Border Patrol from the Canadian border. And this is crazy, but the night before, one of the guys in the chopper had a friend who was a vet, and the night before he had dinner with them at some restaurant, and he told him that he was going to be scouting for elk hunting on this exact mountain range where they found the airplane crash on the mountainside. And so with a loudspeaker in this Border Patrol chopper, with a loudspeaker. They basically radioed to the mountainside, and eventually they found this vet that ran to the crash site. He knows how to do some stuff on animals, and so they dropped a first aid kit. I'm not making this up. He dropped a first aid kit from the chopper with the radio, and he kind of manned the site in that chaotic moment until other people could get there with the access roads and stuff. And of course, this apparently was a pretty extensive first aid kit they dropped and had an IV in it. And I had been laying there and just bleeding out. He saw right away I was going to die just from loss of blood. And so he knows how to start IVs because he does it on animals all the time. And so literally he pricked me and saved my life, started this IV. And the hospital said later, there's no way I'd be living except for that IV that was started. And so that is just, I think that's pretty awesome. And so the vet saw that I was in distress and stuff. I needed to kind of be stabilized or else I wouldn't make it. And so he said, we need to get a chainsaw back here. He was manning the scene. We need to get a chainsaw back here and clear a spot for Life Flight to come in and pick me up and take me out of there. Well, so the Life Flight was on the way. In the chaos, nobody had a chainsaw in their back pocket or whatever. And so this is a mountain range that we're at, and how is a chopper going to land there to get people loaded up? And so the Life Flight was kind of waiting for a place to land, not knowing what to do. And then the vet, and this is in the newspaper article I have, the vet says that we need to get that chopper down here. He's not going to make it if we take him out on an access road. He's not going to make it. Bring that thing down. He was screaming at the people in the chopper. And so check it out. Eventually, they found this space that had a bunch of rocks on it that was kind of on a slant. But they brought the chopper down, and the vet took logs and stones and got it stable enough for that chopper to land, enough to load us up and get us out of there. And again, the hospital said that probably I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for, like, if I had to be carried out on an access road. So just another kind of, I'm sure adrenaline was flowing, but I believe that God was involved there. They estimated it was about 6 hours and 45 minutes from the time the crash happened to the time that we were in the hospital. And they say a good search and rescue on a mountainside like that is about 12 hours. Is kind of standard, but 6 hours and 45 minutes later, I was in one of the nation's best hospitals, Kootenai Medical Center in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which they have just a great facility there. And this next miracle I want to talk about, God providing for medical bills. And before I start this part, I just want to say I am so happy that most of you probably are responsible enough to have medical insurance. And I currently have medical insurance, so I'm not an advocate for no insurance. That's like my caveat of setting this up. But so I had health insurance for quite a few years, and then I think I was about 18 years old. I went to Reading, Pennsylvania, to this ministry to young people they call Open Gate. And Rick Rhodes was he was a missionary to Grenada at the moment. He's in Thailand now, but he was there as a speaker. And he said, I don't know, he probably has health insurance now. I don't know if he does or not. But he said that he doesn't have health insurance as a way of trusting God. And he takes the money that he would spend on health insurance, he puts it into God's kingdom and entrusts God for that. And he had a family. I'm like, wow, that's a great idea. And I was a young, healthy guy. I thought, well, this is a great idea too. And so I did that, and for years I was giving more to God and just felt like a good thing to do. I was healthy. I didn't need medical things, and so it worked out. But then as I was waking up from the coma a couple weeks after the crash, my parents were starting to, like, they were worried about it more than I was, believe me, but they were talking about medical bills of $300,000 and $400,000. And of course, with the brain injury and all that, I wasn't even computing all this or like caring about it very much. But check it out. So they actually sold my business while I was in a coma. So my employee basically bought the business. I woke up, I didn't have my health, didn't have my business. It was like, goodness, what do I have left? But it worked out and stuff. God is good. But so I made some money through selling the business thing, and he took the work that was under contract in Ohio. He went on and did that and stuff. But that wasn't going to pay for all of this, and it is just amazing. So, and I wasn't going to sue the pilot. The attorneys came after me and told me all this money I could have and whatever, and they were probably lying because that's what they do. But basically, I wasn't going to sue, and this plane that we were flying was owned by a company who was basically renting the plane. And so there was some kind of insurance they had that if this type of situation happened, if I signed that I won't sue, they'd cut me a check for $100,000. So then I'm thinking, shoot, if I had health insurance, think about all that money I could have. But so the check, I did that, I signed that paper, and the check was on the way. And then with the money of selling the business and the money I'd saved up and stuff, and this is just amazing. The neurosurgeon that did the brain or the surgery, emergency surgery on my brain, ended up not charging for his services. Life Flight decided they're not going to charge me a penny for that service. Just shaving off over $100,000, lots and lots of money. Off of the medical bills, just by a simple call. I was kind of a famous case in the hospital or whatever, and unusual recovery speed. And at first, they didn't think I was going to make it at all. So there was unusual recovery and stuff. And so medical bills came in. Just to make it short here, I could pay 100% of the medical bills, and I had money left over in the bank. And God provided graciously for the medical bills. So just wanted to put that out there. And again, I'm not an advocate for not having health insurance. But I want to just go over kind of the injury report. The first call my parents got, I had just turned 21 when this crash happened. The first call my parents got in Holmes County said they should come out, but I probably wouldn't make it when they get out there. So there was a blood clot on my brain that had emergency surgery on. And it was kind of a miracle that I was in this great medical facility, one of the nation's best in brain surgery. And they have a they had a guy on staff and in the hospital, and they said if there was 20 more minutes of that kind of pressure that I had on my brain, I'd probably be at least brain dead, if not just completely dead. But they quickly noticed, assessed that I needed relief on that, and so they were able to save my life through that. So anyway, broken arm, my right arm was broken, my back had a break in it, my left eye socket was broken in two places, and just kind of going through this quick, a big puncture in my knee, and that's where I had most of the blood loss that happened, and my right lung was collapsed, and let's see, I was in a coma for a couple weeks. This was not medically induced. This was just from the trauma and the crash, I guess. And I'll say this, and then there's vision loss from the brain injury. But I don't remember anything from. Oh, I almost forgot. Check it out. As we hit the third tree, I remember seeing three angels. And I can't believe I almost forgot to say that. But as I was waking up from the coma, they would try to talk to me and ask me about the airplane crash and what happened and stuff. And I'd just say, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And this is like for 24 hours. I just could not stop talking about these angels that I saw. And people ask me all the time, what do they look like and stuff. And the best way I can describe that is just an awesome, peaceful light. Like, they didn't have like a face or like, it's just awesome and peaceful light is the best way I can describe that. And I just think that in that moment of panic, in that moment of terror, like, I wasn't like, I don't even remember having frightful thoughts in that moment. I remember seeing the angels and just being at peace. And so God was just so faithful in coming through. And I just thought I was going to die, and like I just had complete peace. And people ask me like if I have anything that stays with me today from this crash, and vision loss is the main thing that that goes with me today. So the best way to describe it is left neglect. That's a, the medical term. But if I look straight at, say, Reverend Peachy back there, love you, brother, if he would wave at me with his right hand, I wouldn't see that because I'm looking right at him, right to the left of where I'm looking. Like I say, about 15 degrees is just kind of missing. This is completely here. This is here, but there's a slice of vision in the center that is just kind of missing. So from the brain injury, the left side of my body was completely unable to move for a while. And so with therapy and all that, I eventually got to be able to walk, or like had to relearn to walk. And I couldn't do that for months after the crash, but through therapy and all that, I recovered. But as I started walking right into the door jamb, and it's like, what in the world? But that's eventually how they identified that I had this left neglect vision impairment. But God has just graciously allowed me to compensate over the years. I drive. People ask me if I drive. I usually don't tell them that I have a vision impairment until they're in the car with me. But I feel like I'm a safe driver. but my wife thinks I'm even safer because I'm aware of this and stuff. So thankfully she doesn't freak out. But sometimes like when I eat my food, I'm like, think I'm finished and there's still a slice of food on my plate. But God is good. He's gracious. So I'll say this. There's a couple pictures here then, but I'll say that, you know, my parents and my sister flew out with her newborn baby too, Heather Heatwell. Some of you might know her. They came out and they were warned, you know, we don't know if he's going to wake up, but if and when he wakes up, he might just like, with a brain injury happening, he might just say a lot of crazy things. He might get angry at you. It's just what happens with brain patients. Well, thankfully I didn't do that. I didn't get mad at them or whatever, but I did eventually kind of, I was a single guy and stuff, and I kind of liked the one nurse pretty well. Annalisa was her name, and eventually I proposed to her from the bed there, and I told her I was going to go to Lowe's and buy a stainless steel grill and marinate chicken and do this up for her and stuff. And I proposed to her, and she said no, and I said, without skipping a beat, I said, that's all right. I can do better anyway. And so anyway, sometimes I wonder if I said things that my parents and sister are just so embarrassed to tell me that I did. But like I said, my sister Heather there, she came out with her newborn baby. And then this is my parents down here, my mom and dad from Holmes County. They flew out. My brother lived just north of there, about 5 hours north of there in Lethbridge, Alberta. And basically, they shaved the side of my head to do surgery, and so he shaved the side of his head and took a Sharpie and put stitches on there. And so the nurses just like pointed him in the right direction because they knew exactly what he was there for. But so basically, the first hole up on the skull. This is more details than you wanted to know. But when they first like got into, there's a pressure gauge, and first got into the cavity of my brain, there was like a release of pressure and like even liquid squirting. That's more than you wanted to know, I'm sure, but I'm just going to keep moving here on that one because I want to end with some of the lessons I've learned. And also, if you have any questions, I'll give you a chance to say or ask a question. Those are just a couple shots of the plane crash to give you an idea of what it looked like. Eventually, they brought in an army chopper and airlifted it out to an access road and brought it out. Just gives you an idea. The wing was completely severed there, as you can tell. And another great thing about this is that the gas had all like drained from the tanks in the crash, and the ignition was still on after 2 hours of waking up, but there was no fire. And that was just, they tell me that was completely unusual. Oh, and I forgot to say this, but when Jake came to, he was kind of disoriented and I wasn't responsive. And the only thing I remember from when the plane was going down to waking up from the coma is, and this again is in the newspaper report, but I remember Jake, he was hitting my face. I wasn't responsive. He's disoriented. And so he's doing the best he knows how, but he was like, Scott, if you can hear me, squeeze my hand. Which that wasn't helping my brain injury at all. But just like, I remember feeling my face just go from side to side, wham, wham. And I just remember I squeezed with everything in me, like, stop, you're killing me, man. Seriously. And the newspaper article says, he squeezed my hand hard, exclamation point. So, and people ask me often about Jake, if he was all right and stuff. And he was treated and released. Believe it or not, he was flown in on a life flight with us and stuff, but he was treated and released. And he had to work through a lot of fines and do a lot of training again, but he's flying again. And he's married and has a family. I've only ever seen him one time. He messages me every so often, but I've only seen him one time in person where I just completely forgave him, said, you know, it's really fine. You weren't trying to do this and stuff. Where was I going with that? Oh yeah. He woke his dad up. He was 25-year-old Mennonite guy. He woke his dad up the second night after having two nights of nightmares because it still looked like I was gonna die. And so he was having nightmares of dealing with that because he knew it was his fault stuff. And he woke his dad up the second night at like 3:30 in the morning and asked him to pray with him to receive Christ. He had been going to church and doing the deal, but to receive Christ because he wanted to be able to say what Scott said when he thought he was going to die. And I heard that story as I was waking up from the coma. And I really believe that this was kind of the bitter or better crossroad that put me on a track to see that God was involved. And before this accident happened, like, God had just, like, that night before, God led me to worship on the mountaintop there, just like, God, anything, everything, do whatever you want to do. I just want to live for your greatest glory in all the earth. And, like, the next day I'm in this plane crash, but literally, like, as I look back on that now, this has been one of the biggest blessings that God has ever given me, is the chance to share this story. And it's caused me to see things from an eternal perspective, or it's caused me to like get a sense of urgency as far as reaching the lost and reaching people around me. So anyway, I was in the hospital for 32 days. And eventually we flew back home to Ohio then, where I recovered further. They had me walking when I left the hospital. I kind of mentioned a few things on that already. But there's a lot of lessons I've learned in this process, and I just want to share a few of them real quick here as I wrap up. God is able to save. He is like... As the stock market comes crashing down the last few weeks, man, like what an opportunity to reorient your sights heavenward instead of the things of this world. And that's kind of what happened in this situation for me. My life kind of came crashing down. My business was taken away. My health was taken away. But it gave me an opportunity. It was really a great opportunity to set my sights heavenward, rather than the things of this world, because this life on earth is but a flash, but eternity is really what we're living for. So to live for eternal impact, realizing that life is short, and this was a big one, relationship is what it's all about. You know, I had enough money, I could have bought a Cadillac Escalade, and back then the spinner rims were cool, and I could have had those, but I didn't do that, but I had a lot of friends, and friends came, like, I remember hearing just, like, prayer meetings, Holmes County and Thailand and all over the world, home, prayer meetings were cropping up and praying for me, and people come visiting from all over the place and just giving me a bunch of stuff. Oh, that reminds me, I was given a candy bar bouquet, whatever, by friends from Ohio. They sent, and I said, oh man, that's a lot of calories. And I said, well, tell them thanks, but send it back. Anyway, but I was coming out of a coma, please give me some grace. But relationships were so important. It was the people that I invested in, and it was God that came through for me in that important moment. And so if you can just like lean into relationships and value those, please do, because that is like loving God, loving people is our call as Christian ministers who serve professionally and professional ministers. That's kind of the presentation I have on this. Is there any questions anybody has here? I have just a minute or so, a couple minutes, if anybody has. You said the pilot didn't stand up. No, he was treated and released. I guess I don't even know if he had technically had a concussion, but he was knocked out for 2 hours. So it seems like he probably had something. yeah, literally. Any other questions? If I don't see your hand, it's probably the left neglect thing. Start up here and then we'll get that. Yeah, good question. When I went back about 6 months, right before I went to Asia for 6 months for the EDGE team, I talked to the vet. I went to his practice, and the poor cat that was like knocked out, he was throwing it around on the table, doing the thing. But yeah, thanks for getting that. But he was really grateful and thankful for me coming in there, and he just told it from his perspective. And he wasn't expecting me to ever be walking again, but I walked into his office, and I think it was a blessing for him. And after I was moved from intensive care down to a step down unit and stuff, and where they taught me to walk and whatever, I went back to intensive care before I went home, and nurses and doctors were just crying because they didn't expect I'd be more than just like a vegetable or something when I first came in, if I'd survive. So God just allowed, the doctors said clearly something supernatural was happening to me with how quickly my body recovered. There's a hand back here.
So was it difficult, the process of getting on the airplane to fly back to Ohio?
No, I got to fly first class because... The reason was they thought with a brain trauma, it might just be a better idea to have a little extra space and all that. But I've only ever been in one small aircraft since then. Ivy Peachy from Big Valley, Sam's daughter, Crazy Sam, took me out. I went to Morocco with her, and then she took me up on this flight. And everything was fine until she came in, cleared over the landing, and then she turned around. To come back and land, and everything in me just kind of kept turning. But we survived that one. Yeah. Any other questions? Is that it? So just to end this, I want to pray here, but like I said already, God brought a sense of urgency for me. I was trying to live my life, trying to be a businessman for Jesus. But this story allowed me to kind of put things in an eternal perspective. And really, I'm on borrowed time. And so in some sense, it's an unfair advantage because I don't have anything to lose. But God is just showing his power. And I pray that somehow you can be strengthened to your inner core or in your inner core through this, and I want to leave you with a couple verses from Hebrews 12, some of my favorite verses. Hebrews 12 says that since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race that is marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame. He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And then he says, consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men. And here it is. So that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And Jesus pressed through all this junk. He suffered through all this so that we can survive. And we have an example of what it looks like to survive through this kind of stuff in this world. So that he did that so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So please don't let the stock market work you up. Please don't let, that's just money. And you guys are probably way ahead of me on that because I was kind of anxious a few days ago with the couple thousand I have invested. But let me pray, and I'll just turn the time over to Brian, and we'll go from there. Jesus, thank you for the opportunity, and I pray that you would just be exalted through this story and through each of our stories, through everyone here, God. Would you please use our businesses, use our platforms of influence to impact the nations with the message of Christ, God, and would you please help us to leverage our time, treasures, and talents for the good of the people around us and for the people that we influence. And God, make us the best ministering professionals or professional ministers in this world, and may you be glorified as a result of our lives. And so, God, fix our minds heavenward, and I pray that you would allow us to have the mind of Christ. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thanks so much, Scott.